Welcome to Federal Insights Enterprise Infrastructure Solutions Month, sponsored by Verizon.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration might be one of the most network-intensive agencies. It gathers data from submarines, ships, aircraft, and satellites. It moves photos, visualizations, maps, and weather forecasts among its supercomputers and to and from partners throughout the world. For an update on plans for its network infrastructure, I checked in with NOAA's Acting Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office, Jeff Flick. Start with the network environment at NOAA. I always think of it as very extensive because you've got all of these input sources, ships, planes, submarines, satellites, airplanes, and so on. And then you have a network of supercomputing assets. So I tend to think of it as a pretty complex and high energy network. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. So the network consists of a little over 2,100 locations. Just around 400 of them are manned locations. As you mentioned, supercomputing sites, which require low latency, you know, high bandwidth type environments, all the way down to remote sensors that require very little bandwidth, which really presents a very challenging environment for telecommunications.
And how
the need spectrum is huge.
Right. And how has it evolved over the years? I mean, what is the architecture and what are the technologies that you have in place at this point for getting all of this data and information around?
We've worked, you know, some of the technologies are, I would say, archaic, but they're very resilient because we've had them for so many years. But with the TDM retirement, we are, you know, we're being forced to upgrade various legs of those pathways to more modern technologies, which force the evolution of sensory technology as well.
And TDM, one more time, stands for?
The time division multiplexing transition of the older copper infrastructure that is being retired by the carriers.
Well, time division multiplexing was not obsolete when you installed it. It was a pretty high tech at that point. And that was a technique for being able to force more capacity through a given wire in that case, or I guess it also made the transition to optical, that technique.
Correct.
As you retire it, what are you looking for in the future?
Well, you know, looking to moving into wireless opportunities where that's available. Some of the locations where we have these remote sensors are not densely populated areas, which means they're, you know, low priority for wireless coverage. So we're looking at, you know, if needed, satellite technologies at this point have advanced and the cost have been reduced enough where that might be a viable solution for some of the remote locations, or looking at alternatives, you know, low bandwidth, low frequency.
Yeah, because I wanted to back up for just a moment because, again, when you put in TDM, it was a solution to whatever the challenges were at that time. What has changed, what has evolved over the years such that now that technology over copper is simply not up to the task? What are the shortfalls or the challenges that you have in NOAA's mission areas?
So in many cases, the need for additional bandwidth is there. You know, it's we need more information. Our sensors are more advanced and collect additional information. But in many cases, we still only need a very small amount of bandwidth. This is really driven by the industry looking to retire the electronics that support some of those older technologies and moving it onto fiber or other access methods.
So in other words, your needs or requirements haven't expanded that much, but the vendors are abandoning what it is that works perfectly well in some segments, in some instances.
That's correct. And now our needs have grown exponentially when it comes to some of the large data movement requirements. But that's, you know, we've moved that on to fiber and built infrastructure to support that. It's these low bandwidth sensors that are the real challenge.
Got it. And tell us about some of the other agencies. I mean, NOAA is really a collection and of smaller components, with the National Weather Service and so forth. Tell us about all the mission areas that are covered by the network as it stands and as it will continue to stand for.
So operationally, you know, the National Weather Service and our satellite service organization, they move a tremendous amount of data. They have very high availability requirements for those communications. And rightfully so, because that's what we publish, what, you know, weather warnings and alerts on, and communicate to the safety to the public. You know, there's many other missions, the Ocean Service, the Fisheries Service, and our Oceanic and Atmospheric Research Division. Their research division, you know, they do testing across multiple platforms, research across multiple platforms, from undersea submersibles to supercomputing assets. So wide range of telecommunications needs for that organization. Fisheries, you know, they monitor fishing results around the world, and focused really around the United States. But there's a lot of real-time data coming in on fish counts and that nature. So a lot of coastal requirements. The Ocean Services, you know, they're responsible for keeping the and mapping the navigation, the coastal navigation areas open. And so anytime there's a storm or a change to those pathways, you know, that's monitored and updated through that organization.
And ships get upgraded with new instrumentation, and every time there's another generation of satellites launched, and there are some in the planning stage now, I guess those satellites have more capable instruments and cameras and sensors than the previous ones. And so that would probably be a source of growth in bandwidth requirements.
Absolutely. Yeah, the new generation of satellites are multiple times increase in data that they collect and send back to us. And then the products that we generate from those images have also grown significantly.
And by the way, how does NOAA handle voice?
You know, the majority of that is distributed across GSA contracts and commercial contracts, but just plain old telephone lines. You know, we've over the last decade, you know, we've moved many systems to a VoIP infrastructure, but voice communications, you know, from site to site varies. The majority of the organization has moved over to VoIP at this point.
But there's still a PBX here and there somewhere, right?
Right. Yeah. There's a couple of old PBXs that, you know, people are getting fairly panicked about, you know, when can we get rid of this thing? When can we get rid of this thing? So we're really looking forward to moving on to EIS and using that opportunity to modernize that.
Jeff Flick is acting director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Your transition to EIS shouldn't be complicated, and that's where Verizon can help. With a proven transition process and experience moving millions of connections, Verizon can give you the expertise and support you need, so you can worry less about the risk of disruption or overworking your team. And when you're ready to modernize, we'll be there to help. Rely on Verizon to help make your transition into EIS as simple as possible. The partner government agencies rely on. Get started with a transition guide at enterprise.verizon.com/EIS.
Welcome back to my interview with Jeff Flick, acting director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA. Our topic is NOAA's plans for its next generation of network infrastructure. Let's talk about modernization. What is the overall plan? Talk about the program aspects of it. That is to say, how you do the planning, how you understand what the requirements will be now and in the future, what kind of polling you might do of the organizations to understand their needs.
Sure. You know, modernization is kind of a relative term. It's not just technology modernization. It's process management modernization as well. We are, along with the changes that we're implementing for to support EIS, we're really giving our missions the opportunity to select, do you want networking as a service? Do you still want to manage your own network infrastructure, network versus data versus voice telecommunications? So it all varies from within each organization. It's really the opportunity to simplify it for them, you know, let them focus on their mission. But we're allowing a lot of that decision still to be made at the mission level.
And so they all roll up basically then to your program office.
Correct. And my focus is really making sure that we have the right type of support structures, contracts, and technical resources available to support them.
And what about the supercomputer centers? I guess NOAA has one or more than one, and I always think of agencies that have supercomputing capacity as kind of in a unique case when it comes to some of the network requirements.
We do have a bit of an extreme network infrastructure to support them. You know, multi-hundred gig redundant connections, around the country to support. You know, we have a large facility in West Virginia. We have, you know, resources in Princeton. We have resources in College Park, Maryland, and other contracted sites around the country.
So are you developing, as part of the modernization effort, the replacement effort, a picture of what you want the to-be state to be? And if so, what is it, and how does that happen?
We do, and that's a challenge with a very distributed environment like NOAA. You know, each individual group owns their network and has the right to do what they want to do with it. We're just trying to make sure that they have the best choices available for them to do that. And that, what does that mean? We have the opportunity to provide high quality services to those individual programs, and they can choose from networking programs within the agency. And then those programs support the, you know, those providers support, utilize EIS to provide that level of support.
So you're almost like a broker in some sense for the different components and missions?
So my program office is, that's correct.
All right. And what's the timeline? Where are you now in relation to replacement? And is this something that happens as a big bang effort, or is it segment by segment or mission by mission over the next however long?
Well, yeah, exactly. However long, it'll be executed by mission. But yeah, kind of a big bang, you know, everybody at once. And so, you know, as we move to the award phase of this acquisition with the EIS, you know, the vendor will have to be able to support, you know, many priorities, the operational priorities, as well as, you know, the research and administrative priorities.
And what does the acquisition look like? Are you looking to go to one single vendor for all of your networking needs?
Or the majority of, yes, you know, that's not definitive in a sense, but we are looking to reduce the number of vendors. You know, today we have almost 300 vendors providing telecommunications across the agency, and we need a smaller number to manage.
And will this require any change in the physical infrastructure, that is to say, wiring or satellite stations and that kind of thing?
It is very possible. We're hoping that the utilization of wireless technologies help augment that and may reduce the horizontal cabling within the infrastructure. However, the satellite ground stations and such as that, that depends on the final contract and architectures with the vendor.
I guess the question is there a vendor that is capable of that wide a range of situations, from satellite downlinks and forwarding of that data to Cat 5 or Cat 6, I guess now, within a building?
Absolutely. You know, we're fortunate that EIS provided all of that within the scope of that contract, and we'll be looking to take advantage of that.
And how do you keep on top of what the latest technological trends are so that you can talk turkey with vendors and not get snowed?
A lot of community awareness and engagement. I spend a lot of time with vendors and other colleagues and other agencies in those discussions.
All right. And again, I want to keep probing a little bit more on just how you get the future needs of the missions, because that's really, you know, what you're there to do is support those missions. And how do you ensure that they know what it is that they're going to need in the future, so that all of a sudden they don't call you one night and say, hey, we're constrained here?
So through the FITARA process, you know, we've implemented several controls and gates around acquisitions and program development. And so a lot of that does get communicated. And we also have an annual meeting focused on networking requirements that we try to bring all the programs into to discuss this. You know, what are your requirements current? What are your future? What do you see changing in your program in the next couple of years? We don't buy based on that, but we can start planning based on that. So it's really a planning discussion.
Now, EIS replaces existing legacy contracts, I guess, under the Networks program that goes back, golly, quite a number of years now. Are you operating under the legacy contracts that GSA put out? And what is the transition type of activity that has to take place to move from one to the other?
So we do operate quite a bit of our current spend is on the legacy contracts, about 60% of our spend. is there. And so we anticipate all that will transition over onto EIS task orders once they're awarded.
Jeff Flick is Acting Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA. We'll return with our third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Your transition to EIS shouldn't be complicated, and that's where Verizon can help. With a proven transition process and experience moving millions of connections, Verizon can give you the expertise and support you need, so you can worry less about the risk of disruption or overworking your team. And when you're ready to modernize, we'll be there to help. Rely on Verizon to help make your transition into EIS as simple as possible. The partner government agencies rely on. Get started with a transition guide at enterprise.verizon.com/EIS.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of my interview with Jeff Flick, Acting Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA. Our topic is NOAA's plans for its next generation of network infrastructure. Let's talk about the acquisition strategy in some more detail. First of all, where are you in it? And is it necessary to have all of the final requirements from all of the missions before you put together a request for proposals? Or is there maybe a request for information stage, even for task orders under EIS, where pretty much the vendor community is known?
So we did conduct some RFIs prior to even EIS being awarded. And our task order, we have a significant task order, including the majority of the requirements for the agency, that is in the evaluation process.
So it sounds like you had some input into what EIS itself became before it did finalize.
Absolutely. We've been very active in communicating with GSA, and that, you know, it's very, very pleasing to know that that's been a two-way street.
Are you in the RFP phase yet, or is that yet to actually be formally issued?
It was released, and that period has closed, and so we're currently evaluating solicitations.
And since it is closed, what are the main criteria by which you are evaluating the solicitations?
That's a pretty long conversation, but you know, outside of just the technical components that each vendor had to accomplish to achieve to be on EIS, we're looking at the transition approach and the management approach as in addition to that.
And who participates in those conversations?
We have various evaluation teams, general counsel, our acquisitions team.
And just give us a sense of how big these proposals are. Are they hundreds of pages each?
They are.
So, I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of how you get through
all of
this.
We did put a page limit on the proposal.
Maybe my question is it possible to be too specific such that when you make an award, you won't have the flexibility you might need in the future to take in some unanticipated requirement or need?
It definitely could be. You know, there are techniques that you can utilize with the statement of work versus the statement of objectives, you know, and performance work statements. Those are all different strategies within the acquisition process that can be used to provide enough direction but provide flexibility as well.
And what are you hoping for in terms of vendor support for the transition itself? Because you just don't flip a switch and you go home Friday and Monday you're on a brand new network.
Clearly, it's a lot of information. You know, what do they see as risks? What do they see as a viable time schedule? Understanding, you know, with the information that we've provided about the agency, where do they see the risks? You know, we explained we have a critical weather day requirement that where we do network freezes when there's significant weather events happening across the country.
So there's a quality of service by time and by mission aspect of this whole thing.
That as well. You know, that's slightly different than the critical weather days, but, you know, making sure that we have availability is you know, on needed instruments and locations.
In other words, you're asking, say, for priority service over perhaps other customers they might have if it is a national emergency or regional emergency level situation?
That's correct.
Well, I hope you're the only one on a given day because that could cause some conflict. And,
you know, sometimes maintenance gets delayed or, you know, and those are things that we work out with particular vendors. You know, if we have a particular region that's some weather event is imminent, you know, we look at their maintenance plans and schedules.
And what about cloud? How has cloud affected the way you approach what looks like the next generation of network? Because that's in the network's days, and when you awarded the TDM, cloud computing just simply wasn't a factor.
Correct. You know, as services within the environment, within the local environment, move into the cloud, we clearly need to ensure that we have adequate bandwidth to access that. And, you know, as a science-based research organization, as well as many operational components, you know, start looking and migrating to the cloud. You know, this is a real issue that we're watching and managing, monitoring very closely.
Because there's cost associated with data extraction as it is from clouds, so you don't want your networking piece to be overly costly in addition to what you have to deal with the cloud services providers.
Correct. And we have a lot of direct connections with the providers distributed across the multiple regions, just to manage that bandwidth and that cost.
And again, aside from mission creep and mission requirement growth itself, there's also the growth in mobile computing and mobile devices. And I imagine that's true for NOAA, given that you do have people in the field all over the world and on different platforms. How has mobility changed how you view the future network?
Well, that goes right back to the cloud app, you know, the cloud applications and really looking at zero trust and how we start building the and fulfilling all of those zero trust requirements so we can enable our workforce to work remotely. You know, clearly in this type of, in this time with the pandemic, we're getting a lot of exercise in that. But, you know, having confidence and trust that we can do our jobs securely as a mobile workforce.
And are you looking for cybersecurity services from the vendors as opposed to something you apply afterwards from the CIO's office, for example?
That's clearly laid out in our solicitation. We do have that in the scope. We have a fairly advanced cyber team today, and that's we're working closely with any implementation of networking technologies and how that applies through our topology to support security.
And what's your timeline for hope for award date before the protests?
Yeah, it's you know, do you award quickly and just get onto the protest phase? And we're working through that, and it should be relatively soon.
So this fiscal 2020?
That is the plan.
Okay, and will you have a thorough debrief for the vendors that do not get the award?
Absolutely.
Jeff Flick is Acting Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. To hear this interview again or share it, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights EIS Month, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network.
Your transition to EIS shouldn't be complicated, and that's where Verizon can help. With a proven transition process and experience moving millions of connections, Verizon can give you the expertise and support you need, so you can worry less about the risk of disruption or overworking your team. And when you're ready to modernize, we'll be there to help. Rely on Verizon to help make your transition into EIS as simple as possible. The partner government agencies rely on. Get started with a transition guide at enterprise.verizon.com/EIS.
Hi, I'm Greg Peterson of the Peterson Farm Brothers. If you've seen our videos, you know we're proud to be farmers. Farming can be dangerous. Never assume location or depth of underground utilities or pipelines. Before you start any work on your farm, call 811 or visit clickbeforeyoudig.com to have underground lines located. It only takes a minute and can save your life.
Never assume the location or depth of underground lines. Always call 811 or visit clickbeforeyoudig.com before you start work. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
When we need help, we turn to government. When government needs help, they turn to Federal News Network. Federal News Network, helping feds meet their mission.